Welcome to the Lifetime Body Podcast, where we discuss how to kick ass for life through the pursuit of ultimate wellness, peak performance, and maximum longevity. Kicking ass for life is not just about achieving health or fitness or long lifespans alone. It's about totally kicking ass at everything you do in life. In every episode, join me, author and human performance expert John Zombro, and my amazing co-hosts and guests. We'll dive into the science of exercise physiology, biomechanics, nutrition, physical therapy, lifestyle, and more to meld the concepts of optimal living and advanced training. You'll explore how to look, feel, and perform your best as you live your healthiest, happiest, most successful, and longest life. Let's kick ass for life. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to what is episode number 41 of the Lifetime Body Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and back in 2018, we received a wonderful rating and review from the Devil Runner. And so in that person's honor, this is VH with DLR, running with the devil. Oh, no, wait. What if you said you're more of a Sammy Hagar fan, and whether you want to call it Van Hagar or not, and maybe you like running on the track? Here we go around, round, round, run, run around, yeah. Or hello, PK.
Jay-Z, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Oh, man, just feeling it as usual. TLB podcast, loving it. At the audience, you're awesome. You rock. Let's do this thing.
Wow, that was a lot of energy just right out of the gate there. I mean, you know, it's just 8:30 as we record this, and you're coming out of the gate hot.
Yeah, I mean, not only is this rock and roll health and fitness edutainment, it's slash and burn fitness, baby.
You know, I think when you say edutainment, you go so slow. I think they've caught on. I think you can just say it regular speed now.
Well, what if you said, okay, so we're talking today, the title foot function and running shoe selection. It's a big topic potentially. What if you said, oh, well, you know, you're a fan of the works of Christopher McDougall or Bruce Springsteen. You said, baby, we are born to run. Or if not, you said, what if you run a lot and you get really thirsty and you so now you're Jackson Brown, running on empty, running dry. Okay. Can't stop. It probably won't stop. But then again, if you're listening to the show, you know that.
That's right. That's absolutely true. Well, Jay-Z, good morning. I'm excited to dive in today. We are talking about foot function, running shoe selection. You know, I got to say, this is out of my wheelhouse. This is, this is a world that is, I am not intimately involved with. So I'm here to learn.
That's outstanding. I think you'll have some fun with it as well. And hey, I'm a student too, always learning. We always should be. And spring is in the air. You know, we are now getting, single digit mornings as opposed to sub-zero here in Montana. So you can feel it. You know, this is March, the sun is shining. And at least somewhere, you know, many folks are ramping up or preparing to or thinking about revving up their running programs. And so that's why we put this show in what might seem early locally, but nationally that might not be the case. We're going to provide some input that I hope will be useful for helping everyone have a successful and pain-free season of locomotion.
So is this an issue out there that, you know, the combo foot function versus which running shoe you choose, if you get it wrong, can it lead to pain, or, you know, what happens if you don't get this right?
Yeah, it's a popular topic filled with controversy. And so we've got the idea of, well, you know, how does the foot function? How should it function? Are we modern people the same as we were ancestrally? What can shoes do for us? What do they do that might be against our ideal function? And so we might dance around some of those topics today. But I think the first thing to look at is this, well, how does a foot function? And I'd say this, when we walk and jog and run and sprint, those are similar, but there's three slightly different things. And so when we're walking, you know, we always have one foot on the ground. We usually strike gently on the heel first.
that's not true with the other modes, shouldn't be. And then when we're sprinting, you know, we're, that's kind of like going all out, you know, there's an initial contact only on the forefoot. And so we'll throw those out and we'll say, well, with jogging and running, that's what we're talking about today. So the human foot, it's a brilliant piece of architecture and machinery, and it functions both as a foundation for us to stand upon and a force transference device.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, so basically what that means is the foot's, you know, it's how we both absorb and transfer those forces that are moving us along. And, it's designed, the foot is, to be, both active and dynamic. And so it's actively, you know, their muscles contracting and, you know, relaxing in a certain sequence. And so the foot's dynamically changing in its amount of mobility and stability. Really an interesting thing. It's not a dead lump of flesh. It's a very, very engaged part of our body with every single step.
That's interesting. Okay. So that's something new that I guess I'd never conceived it like that. So you're talking about all the little muscles and tendons and bones and just the whole, you know, the whole shepherd's pie of the foot working together.
Yeah, you can kind of go through and you say, well, okay, we've got 28 bones and quite a few joints. And on the underside, there's four layers of muscle. And okay, you know, those are those things that you know, you have to memorize in physical therapy school. But it is such a amazing, intricate, beautiful thing when it's working right. And the foot almost, it almost acts like a loose bag of bones, believe it or not, just before we're striking the ground. And then it converts into an extremely rigid lever for us to have the ability to push our body weight off the ground and go forward. So underappreciated sometimes. And I think that happens in our modern world because, you know, we historically have, in our years in my time, you know, been chronic shoe wearers, if you will.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that, when was that whole barefoot, what has that been 10 years or not quite 10 years? When kind of this sea change in with the barefoot running thing recently?
Let's say about that, maybe even a little bit more. You know, one of the, premises that we all started to awaken to, maybe some were more aware of as we went along, said, well, the foot is, it's got these functions designed into it, and we're not necessarily born in a deficient manner that we have to, you know, shore it up so much if we just free it and let it do its thing. And there's some truth to that. There's also some exceptions, like with anything. And so we always have to be careful, or we should be careful of using the terms always and never when we're talking about that. So if I try to break it down a little bit, when we have two phases in gait, which is that movement, ambulation, locomotion, running, jogging thing we were talking about. And we have a stance phase when the foot is on the ground, and we have a swing phase when the limb, the leg, you know, the foot is moving through the air. And we employ what we call strike and stride mechanics. And so we have a foot strike, and foot strike is when we make that initial contact with the ground. It ideally should be somewhere on the lateral midfoot to forefoot when we are jogging and running.
Okay, I'm tracking.
Okay, and then we go through this thing, which this is where one of the great controversies or you know, misunderstandings has occurred, both in the lay population and quite frankly in a lot of the medical and scientific community. And we undergo this thing called pronation. So pronation is it's a combination of movements that occur in, you know, multiple joints in the foot. And it happens in three planes. And so it's triplanar, three dimensional, if you want to look at it that way. And it's actually how we absorb some shock and convert or accommodate to our support surface. So pronation is not a bad thing. We need some of it, and we are designed to do it. And so when we have that initial contact on the lateral forefoot or midfoot, let's say, then what happens is the foot settles down, the arches lower, and I'll come back to that. The heel rolls inward, and we basically get the foot onto the surface so that then we can start to work with it. So arches, you know, everyone thinks about the one that we know of, the medial longitudinal arch, and that is our large major arch in the foot. But we also have a secondary arch, which is the transverse metatarsal arch. So those bones that go out to the toes are designed to be kind of in an upward dome shape. And when we pronate, that arch also flattens a bit. It allows the forefoot to splay and the toes kind of spread outward and forward, and all that, you know, gives us this grip, if you will, on the ground. And that happens from the initial contact to about what we'd call mid stance. So you're about halfway through the time you're spending on the ground, which is actually quite brief.
Interesting. Okay. So we'll keep on going. I'm absorbing a lot of this today, Jay-Z.
Okay. So we're talking about that gait cycle, and we talked about, well, the limb swings through the air and then it has the strike. That's the initial contact. Then it pronates, and you know, we do that. Now we're at this mid stance, and it's the time where the foot needs to begin preparing for the push off. And so how that happens is we go through a process called supination. And supination is basically just the opposite of pronation. You know, as we move forward, the foot naturally, or it should if it's a healthy foot, kind of winds back up. And so those arches re-elevate, and the joints will configure in a way, there's almost locking mechanisms in those joints where, okay, the foot stiffens up a tad, and then we undergo heel off, which means your heel is lifting up off the ground. That causes the forefoot to flex, or at the toes, particularly the great toe, the big toe, and that puts a tension across our plantar fascia, which is that long, powerful ligament on the bottom of the foot. It functions as a windlass mechanism. It's just a physics term. So basically you have a cable with a fulcrum or a tensioning device on it. And that makes the foot stiffer, so we can then have toe off or propulsion. It's a beautiful thing. And in the natural or barefoot condition, we're just designed to see that happen over and over again, without us telling the body to do anything. And here's the really crazy thing. If you watch any kid running in the grass, or, you know, an athlete running on a field barefoot or the beach or what have you, you're going to notice that when they're in that barefoot condition, they land on the forefoot under the forward hip with a flexed and flexing knee. And that's basically how we're designed to function. It works great. You don't have to have a lot of special cues or shoes to make that happen in most cases.
So then if it is natural to do that, say for a kid or someone athletic barefoot, what's going on? How did we get to this point? If that's our natural state, how did we get so far afield from that?
Well, the theory would be, and I think it's a valid one in many cases, is that, lifetime shoe usage tends to diminish those properties. You know, the foot is not just protected, and there is some value in protecting your foot depending on where you're at or running in particular, but it causes some weakness and some atrophy and a loss of that proprioceptive feel and function in the foot. And the more shoes we wear, the more we run, then this foot becomes this sleepy foot. You know, it's no longer working. It's just going along for the ride, slapping down. And those old style running shoes, which were heavily fortified to control mobility, as well as thickly cushioned, elevated heels, pointy toes, lots of negative issues there. Well, what they would do was encourage heel striking, overstriding, and motion is one of those things where we always have to be respectful of. If you stop motion in the chain, block it at the foot, it's going somewhere. And so those forces are going up the chain and causing people problems at the knee, hip, and back, sometimes even on the opposite side of the body. So it's really interesting thing that we see.
Interesting. Okay. So interesting. All right. So I guess I'm thinking about what's are there any more before we get into, the kind of the key issues that we want to talk about? Is there anything else as you're sort of setting the table for this?
Yeah, and I really feel like I was excited about that topic and just rolled through it. But what ultimately we have is, in most, not all, but most runners, you know, recreational runners, and even some elite level runners, we have inefficient running patterns. Now, this can be for, you know, many, many reasons, but one of them is this whole shoe related phenomenon and foot deficiencies. And so if we can find a way to get away from these excessively overbuilt shoes and, you know, more naturalize both how the foot is functioning and how the gait is working, we can do a lot of things. That, I'm not saying it doesn't mean, oh, occasionally you need professional intervention or the use of you know, strength and conditioning and drills and technique. All those things are immensely valuable, but it really starts at this foundation of the foot, and getting that natural genetically designed function restored.
Got it. And one thing that, you know, obviously we're not selling any shoes today or any particular methodology. So I think that you could be considered an objective resource, because you don't have a dog in the fight for, you know, like a heavily cushioned shoe or barefoot running or these five fingers. It's kind of, you're just talking from the stance of what you've seen.
Yeah. And I paused there for just a second because I thought, well, okay, I just put up a video yesterday that, you know, goes along with this and provides some visual examples. And so as I'm thinking about it, I think I had six different types of running shoes up there, and they were six different brands. And I did mention that, you know, nobody's sponsoring me to say any of this. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely being objective. And I think it's really a case by case situation for each of us. You know, our running experience, our injury history, our foot function, our, you know, all those things. We need to take that into account. But ultimately, if we can get more barefoot like in our running, we're probably going to benefit. Now, that might mean you know, that one person might be running with a moderate shoe and another a minimal shoe, and then another person, depending on where they live, you know, could be barefoot much of the time.
Hey folks, thanks so much for listening today. This show and every episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Lifetime Body. At TLB, we offer a life-changing collection of services that include one-on-one health consultations, performance coaching and training packages, and inspiring workshops revolving around the five life-optimizing components of food, movement, sleep, ergonomics, and awareness. Whether you're looking to tune up your health or body composition, train more effectively and get results in athletics, or bring wellness and productivity-enhancing workshops to your group or business, we've got you covered. Check out thelifetimebody.com, click on the services menu item, and start kicking ass for life today. Now back to the show.
Yes.
There are some issues that we would consider. So if we talk about this concept of overpronation, and so again, I mentioned about pronation is kind of that rolling in and down of the foot, and it's natural. It is how we absorb shock and how we adapt to the support surface. So we don't want to have none. It's just like anything biologic, there's a sweet spot. But with overpronation, what tends to happen is a person may either have some, you know, some inefficiencies in their gait, some mobility stability problems, you know, stiffness, weakness, what have you, or just an overall high degree of laxity, so that they pronate a bit excessively. They, you know, go a little too far into that rolling position, or they maintain it for too long. And so either way, this overpronation can set the foot up so that it's not stiffened up enough, because it needs to supinate in the second half of that gait cycle for push off. And so that's where we get these problems. You know, pushing off on a flexible foot is going to cause injury and tissue stress. It's fairly obvious. So, you know, we get into this discussion, say, well, can, you know, just practicing, you know, standing and doing some exercises and ultimately a little bit of running barefoot or in lesser shoes help that? Yes, in most cases. But if we have an individual that's very high body weight, very high mobility, that might not be a person for whom a lot of running is indicated anyway. Just, you know, look at that from a biomechanics perspective. But that individual, you know, might not be able to tolerate or even adapt gradually to the training stresses of barefoot running. And so they might benefit from a bit more footwear and support. So we just have to be careful of, you know, these blanket statements. I think that goes back to, you know, your original comment about, you know, the barefoot revolution. And, you know, I saw so many injuries pouring into the clinic because a lot of people for whom it wasn't ideal jumped into the least shoes possible and also didn't progress gradually, you know, would just keep on with their training level despite making this big change. A lot of injuries. So, you know, we want to try to avoid that. Next thing is looking at body weight. And I didn't use the term overweight, but, you know, any person who's large has more mass. And so that when they hit the ground, there's a greater ground reaction force. It's got to go somewhere. It's going to go up through the body. Well, it's really the muscular system that absorbs shock, and it's mostly our quads. You know, so when those knees flex and those quads lengthen, that's really our gift to deal with impact loading. But again, a person of high body weight may, you know, they may need to work on actually conditioning those springs in their legs to take some stress off their feet when they're moving into a minimal shoe situation. Then we've got these, historically, stability and motion control shoes. And those were basically what they sound like. They're shoes that are trying to arrest the motion that's occurring. Primarily, they're trying to stop pronation or reduce it, minimize it, whatever terms you want to use. And those types of shoes, so the studies have been very informative. You know, it looks like in a lot of those shoes, the foot continues to pronate inside the shoe. And so the early studies thought, oh gosh, you know, these shoes are, you know, we can videotape somebody running on a treadmill. We put the stability shoe on, we don't see as much pronation because the shoe's not moving as much, but the foot's moving just as much inside. That's got, oh gosh, you know, that's a very interesting thing. And so I'm not as crazy about those shoes as I once was. You know, I thought, oh gosh, this makes some sense. You know, we've got somebody that needs some reduction in all this extra mobility they've got, this shoe might be of benefit. But in most cases, what I find is if we get back to natural things and train and improve how the whole body functions, you know, that works better than just strapping on this shoe. And I know I'm rambling, but I want to get this point out, is that if we alter that foot function and really we do limit motion at the foot, if we're doing that a bit too much, those stresses do go up the chain. And so it's a double-edged sword. The foot might feel better and you might be able to run a little bit more until you get the overuse injury, you know, at the knee from, you know, these shoes.
Interesting. The point about how the shoe is covering up the, you know, what's happening with the actual foot. So you get sort of a false positive there on improvement. That's kind of fascinating. What's next?
Yeah, well, then we look at really what's hot these days. It has been for a number of years. It's the maximally cushioned shoes. And so they're, you know them, you see them, they're really thick midsoles. And there's been quite a bit of evolving research in those shoes. And, you know, again, there might be a place if you have a person who's very stable and who's heavy and is kind of a hard hitter, you know, there's some data that suggests that can help this particular portion of the population. But for a lot of people running in maximally cushioned shoes, and I'm not talking about moderately, I'm talking about the really thick ones, they may be deleterious. And that's because, one, they decrease that feel or proprioception that the foot needs to figure out how to function. And so the foot gets sleepy and it starts to slap down. And so we get some of those same problems traveling up the chain. The other thing is, you know, if you imagine standing on a big old wad of marshmallows, it's a little wobbly. And so if we have a person who already is struggling with stability, maybe has some joint laxity, has some muscle insufficiencies, and we start making more wobble and wander come up their chain, that's a problem. And so, again, I think, you know, we always have to look at these things objectively.
Got it. Okay, I'm tracking for sure. What are the other issues that we need to sink our teeth into?
Yeah, the elephant in the room, the orthotic, you know. And so if we're on one hand, we're saying, oh, we want to try to get most people when possible to get into less shoe and to use some even barefoot technique, while the orthotic is really the opposite. It's like, oh, well, you know, your foot needs a lot of extra help and we're going to put that in a shoe and, you know, we're going to take the opposite approach. You know, this gets back to the always or never thing. There is a place for orthotics, particularly when we have someone who's, you know, got a lot of issues, is injured or has been injured, and we're trying to offload tissue stress. You know, there's a benefit. But, you know, I think two things. The original, founding theories on orthoses was that, we had to put the foot into this neutral position and use a fairly rigid product and lock it up there. And that makes no sense when you look at a dynamic model of how the foot functions. You know, if we put the foot in one position and lock it, that's really creating kind of a club foot, which we don't want. Mm. And then when you go into the more flexible or soft or what we call accommodative orthotics, which are made of, you know, foams and corks and that kind of thing, they can help in small cases. But ultimately, you know, do you want to always have to think about, oh, I'm going to go for a run, but I got to, you know, duct tape this wad of garbage underneath the bottom of my foot before I can function? Is that what happens when, the cheetah is thinking like, you know, maybe I'm going to take down the gazelle and hold on, I got to strap on my orthotic? No. You know, be a natural beast.
Right. Okay. The orthotics. Huge fan. Duct taping a slab of garbage. All right. A little bit later, we're going to talk about sort of your recommendations and suggestions, but you had one more issue you wanted to dive into before we do that.
Yeah, and this is for all runners, you know, it's all about mileage. And so when you are trying to improve your function, it's a good idea to run less, to reduce mileage. And no runner wants to hear that. And that's really been a challenge I've had professionally for 35 plus years. But here's the point. If a runner's highly motivated and they want to do all that metabolic training to improve their lactate threshold or their VO2 max, great. But if your mechanics are crappy, you're not going to get as much out of that metabolic training. And you're also going to have an injury. But if you fix your mechanics first, that's the way to do it. So I try to convince folks without being too snarky is, you know, hey, let's get you running less for a little while as we teach you how to run right.
Right. Because the repetition, I mean, essentially if you have an error or you have like a pebble in that, the metaphorical pebble in that shoe, you are just, you know, more mileage means that you're just hammering on yourself more, right?
Yeah, more mileage. And so I love vehicular analogies, use them a lot. And so, you know, if you look at a marathon or a runner just running a lot of mileage, whatever, that's a long road trip. So would you take a car or a vehicle that is, it's got something loose, it's clanking, it's wobbling, it's got smoke coming out of it, it's making a funny noise. Would you take that on a long road trip? No, you'd tune it up first and get it running right before you did it. And that's what we really need to think about. And the problem comes in, you know, people run for so many reasons and they get so much out of it and love it, but we've got to, still come to Jesus on that and find a way to, optimize mechanics before we layer on volume.
Right. And ultimately, if you do want to, if performance is what you're going for, you may have to take a brief pause to work on form in the present so you can perform better in the future.
Yeah, it's not really that tough of a pill to swallow.
No.
It's a pill of joy.
Pill of joy. Well, hey, let's move on. Let's talk about your recommendations and suggestions for selecting running shoes for the audience out there. You piqued their curiosity and they're saying, all right, give me some guidelines about how to move forward.
Yeah, this is a short list. And I don't think it's the most comprehensive. The last, or in other words, that's the shape that the shoe is built around. It's very important. It's very important that matches the shape of your foot. So a long time ago, you know, when running shoes first came out, they tended to have these really wide heels and super pointy toes. And you know, I would look at those things and think, well, that doesn't look like a foot. But now we see that, you know, most of these shoes have narrow heels and wider forefeet and toe boxes, and it looks like you're footprint when you step out of the shower when your foot's wet. And that's what we really want, because that helps to allow the foot to to function normally.
Nice. Okay. So literally, you just want it to sort of mirror what your foot looks like in its natural form.
Yeah. And so easiest way to do it is turn the shoe upside down and look at it. And if it looks like a foot, it's on your list of shoes to try on or consider. But if it, if it looks like something from another planet, best move on.
Nice. All right. That's practical. What else are we thinking about when we're thinking about shoes?
Excuse me. Well, we're thinking about traction.
Interesting. Okay. Tell me more.
Well, we want some, traction. And so generally speaking, you should try to match the outsole of the shoe to the terrain that you're running upon. That makes sense to everyone. But, the point would be, for trail use, you want a shoe that's got more lugs and traction. For road use, you don't want that because it's kind of wonky feeling. You want the, smoother profiles. And when you're running on grass, whenever possible, just ditch the shoes.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay. So yeah, we kind of talked about traction, just making sure that the shoe matches its use, and that that's just so helpful. But then we get into this whole cushioning thing, and we were talking about that with the maximalist shoes, the fat shoes. Well, the shoe industry is really pushing those these days. They're selling, and most of those midsoles are made of EVA, that's the ethylene vinyl acetate foam that we all recognize. And the shoe industry is moving away from a lot of the gimmicks and air and gel and hard plastic and whatever. So we're seeing just more midsoles that are primarily made of foam. But in reality, it's our quads and our feet that do most of the shock absorption. So one of my recommendations is, you don't have to go to no cushioning. I'm not suggesting that. But try to go with less cushioning than you think you need. And that will encourage your natural shock absorbers to upregulate. And having too much cushioning, of course, causes, potentially some negative things. And again, you're looking at surfaces. So if a person runs on a track or a grass field or a dirt path, you don't really need much cushioning at all. So just have a very thin layer in your shoes. Road running requires a bit more because, asphalt is, harder for sure. And certainly it's temperature dependent. A road will be actually softer in the hot summer sun than it is in the winter. Shoe midsoles also behave similarly in most cases if they're primarily foam. But here's the thing, just try to go with less cushioning. But then when you look at concrete, well, what if I run on concrete sidewalks? I say don't. Concrete, it's a man-made surface. It's not a natural surface. It's super dense. And it really is an injury waiting to happen. It's just so hard to have that strike and reduce the ground reaction force that comes back at you so fast from concrete. And so just a few thoughts: use less cushioning and use natural surfaces when possible. But if concrete's your only option, just walk.
Interesting. Okay. So I feel like that's a little nugget there. That's a little pearl, which is if you have less cushioning in the shoe, your body will compensate for that. I'm assuming that if the other points are in line, or like, let's say you are transitioning from a heavily cushioned shoe to one that maybe has less cushioning, do you want to reduce your workload? Is that, would you sort of, work into that gradually?
Oh yeah. I mean, you're looking at accommodation taking some number of weeks or months in some cases. And it's worth doing because when we improve biomechanics, we improve shock absorption in the long run, tissue health and performance and longevity. And so, if you want to, if you want to avoid this phenomenon of outliving your joints because you ran them into the ground, this is the way to do it. But if a person says, nope, I'm going to wear overbuilt shoes with crappy form and just pound it, they're the people that are, pissed off in the waiting room for their knee replacement.
Oh boy. Well, it's not the years, it's the miles, as they say. What's another consideration to think about as you're selecting shoes?
This is one of my favorite ones. This is heel to forefoot differential, also known as drop. And so it's another area where the shoemakers are, you know, really doing some great work these days. And, you know, those old school shoes, you know, they had a 10 to 15 millimeter drop in height from the heel to the ball of the foot. And this actually increased the heel striking, the impact forces, and believe it or not, stresses to the Achilles tendon as well. So the newer shoes, they've really embraced this, and we have a number of zero drop configurations. They're level from heel to toe. And in many others, there's a moderate amount of decline from the heel to the forefoot of about 4 to 6 millimeters. These shoes are great because they allow us to have that midfoot strike. When you jack up the heel, it actually encourages the heel strike and the overstride, which we don't want. And so definitely I think that's something to look for. And as you indicated, everything requires accommodation. So if you change what you've been doing for many years you know, 15 millimeters, it's like, oh, okay, well, that the tissues are going to have to adapt to that. Let's just go easy for a couple of weeks. And lo and behold, the body, being brilliant because it's a human beast, adapts.
Very nice. What else should we be thinking about?
Well, now you get into this, back to the stability issue. So we still have these shoes that are either neutral shoes. In other words, that cushioning in the midsole is all of one density or durometer, as the shoe industry calls it, versus a stability shoe, which has a second density medial midsole. So that there's a part that's under the heel and arch that's a stiffer and firmer. So the idea is as you roll down on that when you're pronating, it decreases the rate and magnitude of your pronatory force, if you like that term. In most cases, I think if we're doing all the right things and improving strength and flexibility and form and awareness and training, the need for that stability shoe starts to go away. And we know that ultimately, if we can get most runners, you know, running naturally, you know, they're going to perform better and have less injury risk. So, you know, I'm not saying never use a stability shoe, but I'm saying in most cases, if we don't, we have the potential to get more. And that might, again, if you've got the person who's really mobile and really heavy, or just has other reasons, other issues, alignment issues that just they can't be overcome. Maybe there's a place for the stability shoe, but we want to keep it minimal.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, kind of a common theme here is that you have to objectively take a step back and sort of, if you're looking for a different performance out of your shoe, open up some of these variables because, excuse me, what might be best for your particular situation and body type and mileage and, you know, workload could be different than what you're used to.
Yes.
Very good. What else is on this list of considerations, John?
Well, we've got stiffness of the shoe versus flexibility of the shoe. So, you know, the shoes have these, they bend, you know, at the forefoot, and that's called the toe break. And some of that's related to how the shoe's constructed on the inside when the last is configured. And some of it's, there can be grooves, flex grooves cut in the outsole or the midsole. But we want a shoe that actually bends where the foot bends. And so this is an interesting thing. If a shoe is designed in such a way that it either doesn't fit properly or its flex point is too far back or forward, you'll know that when you try it on. That's good to mention that. The other thing is we want to look at torsional stability in the shoe, and that's where, you know, like you can hold it lengthwise and twist it. And if a shoe is really stiff and you can't twist it, it's not going to allow that uncoupling, of all those joints, which kind of happen like dominoes as we pronate and supinate. And so, you know, try to look at shoes that both flex in the right spot for you, but also that don't feel excessively rigid in nature for running.
Interesting. Okay. So the list is, there's a lot of different considerations working together. What else do you have for us?
Yeah, look at toe box volume. So we talked about that lasting where we want the width, the shape of the toe box to be wide, but also we want enough room in terms of vertical height for the toes so they don't feel pinched or cramped. And that's important to allow for that natural forefoot splay and toe spread to happen. when sizing a shoe, the easiest way to do that is make sure you have about a thumbnail's distance between the big toe and the end of the shoe. And also that when you've got your socks that you're going to, if you're wearing socks and you're to run in, shoes are laced up and you can still wiggle your toes a little bit. That's, you know, that's important. And a really tight toe box is not desirable in many cases. And, you know, it may even relate to bunion formation. There's multiple factors on that pathology, but a super tight toe box is one of them.
That's no bueno. So would you say that maybe we've gotten used to purchasing shoes with too small of a toe box, or shoes that are half size too small, just because we're not giving ourselves that full thumbnails width?
Yeah, there's two things on that relate to fashion. You know, wide toe box shoes. You know, they're not as sexy looking as 22 shoes. You know, both in terms of dress shoes and other things. So people, you know, they want to gravitate towards too narrow and mm-hmm. less functional. And then the other thing, as you indicated, especially with women, and this is not gender derogatory. It's the bigger one's foot is the one doesn't care for that. So, a lot of times people will just buy a shoe that's a little tight to say they wear, X size as opposed to X plus 0.5. It's a crazy thing, but it's true.
Interesting. Well, I know you have two more considerations when someone is thinking about selecting the right shoe for their program.
Yeah, well, just look at the uppers. And, uppers, mesh is growing. Mesh is great because it's breathable, but it's also probably not quite as durable. We're seeing some changes there. There are still, if a person does a lot of wet weather or, mountain trail, snow, ice running, there's Gore-Tex shoes and this kind of thing. Good, but, have the upper fit your use. And then with laces, there's all sorts of laces, stretchy versus non-stretchy, flat, round. I prefer the flat laces. I just think I don't know that they're pushing on my foot as much. And I certainly personally don't like the cable lacing systems where you tension a cable. Seems like for running, the pressure across the dorsum of the foot's just a little too great for most of us. There are also some kind of upper and lace configurations where how the shoe laces is slightly off center, and sometimes that's beficial for people who have very high insteps because they're more sensitive to the pressure of the laces. So just experiment is all I'm saying. Find something that really feels right. And with running shoes, they're generally not made of leather, so they're not gonna break in or change. If it doesn't feel right on day one, it's probably never gonna feel right. So you're really looking for that marriage, that fit that's spot on. And it takes some effort to find it sometimes.
Gotcha. Love at first sight is what you're looking for. All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. And the last thing is just weight, as not in WAITPK, but, the heft of the shoe. And, lighter is generally better if you're looking at, speed of running and economy. And there's a lot of studies that support, oxygen consumption goes down the lighter your shoe is. But, obviously some shoes for their protective nature need to be a bit heavier. And there's often a trade-off in durability. The lighter the shoe, the less long it lasts. And you make your own decisions there, but just be aware of, how weight factors in and what you prefer for your personal running.
Got it. So someone, they've been listening up today. They're going to check out the video, read the blog post. How would you kind of sum this up if they said, all right, Jay-Z, you made an impact with me. How do I move forward?
Well, I'd say, be open-minded and objective. And so this whole topic is, do any of us have issues with how our feet are functioning and how our running gait is working? And if it's not as good as it could be, and we always want it to be as good as it could be because that's going to help us, then we need to figure out what to do. And in that case, we might say, well, let's consider working with a professional. And there might be several professionals on your team. If you're injured, first of all, you might say, well, okay, I'm probably going to need to see somebody to help get over this injury. And so maybe that starts, at a medical level because it's unclear and needs diagnosis, or you may need, some more significant interventions. But in most cases, it's like, well, see, you know, maybe a physical therapist who can, you know, analyze your gait and see where your deficiencies are, dysfunctions, and then we make a program to address that. So some of that involves training in this gait issue, but also, you know, shoring up, you know, the rest of the running body. The athletic body, and if one, even if one's not necessarily, say, you know, let's say you're a soccer player like you used to be, and it doesn't matter if you take more than a couple steps quickly, you are a runner. And then another professional in there is somebody who's going to work with your form. Is it a coach? Is it a trainer? And do they know, you know, a lot about strike and stride mechanics and training and drills? Can you get that help? And then lastly, I think the footwear professional is extremely valuable, because we want someone who really knows the brands, knows the models, knows a lot of the generalities, with, you know, of what a foot or a runner looks like and is doing, and then what they need. And so it's kind of a thing where, you know, you can get all that information, you know, for free on the internet, or you can go work with people. But nonetheless, I think it's, that's how the open-minded and objective nature goes into, you know, what are the steps?
And interesting.
Then we go to building the performance from the ground up. And so that's, you know, again, you know, I think it was the Egyptians that kind of figured that out with the pyramids, right? And so, you know, it just doesn't make sense to try complicated workouts or, you know, exercise routines if the foot's not functioning right, because we're just not going to get the right force transference that we were talking about initially. So we want to make sure that our, you know, our force management is ideal. And so fix the foot and let shoes help with that. And so, you know, I think we always want to use as little shoe as possible, but sometimes that means that there's quite a bit of shoe. And again, just depends. And lastly, I think we want to do some barefoot training. And, you know, obviously here in Montana, you're not going to go, well, probably not going to go outside at 7 degrees this morning and run on the icy streets barefoot. So we know that. But you can do some indoor exercise barefoot, which is good. And if that's safe or allowed in your gym, you know, there might be some applications for that. But as soon as you have this chance to be on the field, on the beach, even on a track, take off the shoes and try a little bit of running. At first, maybe it's just jogging for a minute or two, or doing some strides or what have you, and then ultimately working up to be the ability to do an actual workout barefoot. You know, again, everything is dose specific. We have to give our bodies, feed them what they can absorb and digest. And so when you're looking at your movement recipe, you know, you've got to be intelligent about it.
Yes. Well, Jay-Z, those recommendations are tactical and they're also very practical. What would you say in terms of sort of the whole offering? So someone says, all right, I want to check out all of your thoughts on this. Where would you send them so they could really absorb everything that you have available on this topic?
Well, I'd say this, probably the best place to start is this week. You know, the information that we just talked about is, it's summarized in an article on the Lifetime Body website. And also some different points of this are emphasized in the video that's on the Lifetime Body YouTube channel. So those are great resources. And I, you know, this is a lot of what I do in my work with, you know, consults and coaching with folks. And so, you know, there's that. And if I kind of, you know, segue into this, you know, now's the time at the end of the show and we always have the review of the week. Well, I don't have one to read this week, and it's not because we didn't receive it. It's because I'm trying to bundle some things together. So a few weeks ago, we had Jim from South Dakota who asked a number of questions, and some of those related to today's topic. And then I've also received a few other inquiries. And what I'd like to do is put those together into a show. I think I just need a tiny bit more information. So I would solicit from any listener, if you've got some thoughts about foot function and running shoes, orthotics, training, you know, shoot me an email at john@thelifetimebody.com or ping me on Twitter and give me your question. And I will happily weave that into a show that's going to come up soon. So that's kind of what I would have to say about that.
Wow, cliffhanger, really? So you're teasing an upcoming mailbag to really answer those questions. So if you want to get that in, absolutely send that over to John. And if you like what you're hearing, certainly rate, review on whatever platform. It helps us out a lot to reach more people.
Yeah, and I in signing off, I realized, when I was talking about that content, the article, the blog post that's out this week also has a link in it to another half dozen articles, which I've written over the last several years on these topics of running mechanics and shoes and barefoot and some other things. And so if you're, feeling very academic and you'd like to study up, there's, I think, a plethora of possible.
Very nice.
Awesome. Well, thanks, PK, and thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Adios.
Thank you for joining us on the Lifetime Body Podcast, where we kick ass for life through the attainment of ultimate wellness and the pursuit of peak performance and maximum longevity. If you are enjoying this content, please leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to the show and share it with your friends and family. Also, check out thelifetimebody.com, where you can access a variety of publications and media that can help you achieve the highest levels of health, fitness, success, and happiness. And be sure to subscribe to the weekly Kick-Ass for Life update, which keeps you real-time on the latest releases from TLB. Until next time, this is the Lifetime Body, where science meets common sense and where we help you kick-ass for life.